The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So kind of what I'm trying to do this morning, just give you a little bit of a general introduction before then we'll go into more detail with the other ones, with more detail as we go along here today and the other days. But for now, I'd like to know how many of you fit into these different categories, approximately. besides those who fit into all of them, can show of hands, how many people, in one way or other, put themselves in the category of the first one, desire? Okay. How many aversion? Okay. How many sloth and torpor? How many restlessness and anxiety? How many for doubt? So in this particular group, the sloth and torpor and doubt is the least. So among those, sloth and torpor had three people. How many people was sloth and torpor their second category they put them in? Okay. And so what I'd like to try to do is to try to form some groups that have representatives of each type. And ideally, we would have all been perfect, you know, perfect division. We could have had one in each, you know, groups of five people, one of each category. But that's not going to work. So I was wondering if the people for whom sloth and torpor is our second thing, whether they'd be willing to represent that category for the purposes of this discussion. So let's see how we can do this. Let's try having six groups. Let's see, sloth and torpor. How many people are now willing to be in sloth and torpor? One, two. Was there one more here? So one, two, three, four, five, six. So six people willing to represent that. Thank you very much. and we have six doubters. Let's see. One, no doubt. One, two, three, four, five. Only five? We have five doubts? Any more? So now we're going to form groups. So what I'd like to suggest is that all the ones be over here. And all the twos group can be on this side, over here. And the threes can be in the back there. And the fours can be on the far end someplace of the community hall. And the, what did I say, that's four, far. And then five can be over somehow, some other part of the community hall. And let's see if we can get six in the conference room there. In the conference room, there's a lot of chairs in the closet there you can bring out. And there's also closets, lots of chairs. And you can bring your chairs out here, or there's lots of chairs in the cabinet just outside here you can bring out. They can make a circle. And then what I'd like you to do is when you form your group is for you to go around, and maybe not everyone will speak, because some of these, you know, if there's a lot of desire types, I don't know if there's time for everyone. It's only fair. talk a little bit, report a little bit from your perspective in that category, what it's like to meditate with that particular hindrance, and what's your experience with desire coming up, and what effect it has on your meditation practice, and your experience, your history with it. You know, you don't have to reveal, you know, dirty secrets, but whatever you're comfortable with. And then as you go around, you know, talk about that. And if there's enough time, then at some point, maybe after 15 minutes or so, you can also talk a little bit. And so I want each of the categories. So desire. So maybe not all the desire people, but maybe, you know, it just takes about 2 or 3 minutes for one or two people to report a little bit. And then do the ill will, and then do aversion, and then sloth and torpor, restless anxiety, and doubt. So the other categories get to hear a little bit what the world looks like from your category, from your kind of operating mode. And once you've gone around and done some of that, at some point you have the option to expand outwards a little bit wider. And what is life to be in the world? With that operating, that is the primary operating. How do you see the world? How do you see yourself? How do you negotiate the world if desire or ill will is kind of like the more kind of default you tend to fall back on? Is that understandable enough? And it's partly to so we all learn from each other. Each of us have strengths. And so it's very interesting sometimes to get the perspective of someone else who has a different kind of experience of how this all works. And you don't have to reveal anything you're uncomfortable with revealing, so feel at ease with that. And hopefully that'll go smoothly enough. And I'll ring a bell when it's all over. Well, it depends how the energies feels. I'll try to listen, but I was thinking it would take about 30 or 35 minutes to do this. And so, it might give you enough time to cover both those topics, meditation and kind of just generally in the world. And if it's really lots of energy around these topics and just keeps going, maybe we'll go a bit longer. But if after 20 minutes, it's like everyone is slothful and just kind of dragging, then we will maybe stop sooner. Okay? So, thank you. That was nice for you, and more than nice, I hope it was educational to hear other people's perspective of how all this goes. And even though you might be, more in one category than others, I'm sure all of the above visit you at times. And so to hear someone who's an expert, speak from the inside, it might be interesting. So. We have a few minutes before lunch, but anything anyone wants to say about that? Anything particularly you learned or was insightful or, yes?
I thought it was like traveling to different lands, different realities. It is really neat, actually.
Okay, thank you.
It's not working? Oh, it is? Okay, it is. Okay. Since you're talking about traveling, I just want to share what Mary Louise, the example she gave, because I really loved it about
that. Do you have her permission?
Okay. Can I share your analogy? Yeah, I thought so. It wasn't super personal. It's just a really great, it's the using her GPS as her teacher. And getting attached to going a certain way, and then there's a detour, and we might get really, oh God, I really didn't want to go this way, but the GPS just very gently redirects you. And I thought that's a great analogy.
I thought it was interesting that whatever our strength is, that it carries over throughout the day as well. I mean, I never thought about that before.
It's operating in meditation, but
it's operating in your daily life as well.
Yeah, the mind in meditation was a really important moment for me after I practiced about regularly for about a year, where I realized that the line between my mind in meditation and my mind outside was an arbitrary line, and it was the same mind. And so then I got really, really interested in not just having, for me, I call it the integrity. I had to experience some integrity when I meditated. I wanted to have that integrity in my daily life as well. And so then I became interested in applying the meditation or the mindfulness or the practice in daily life as much as in meditation.
I appreciated the experience a great deal, and I thought it was so. It just made me feel humanity all around, that it wasn't my problem or it wasn't personal, and it was such a, and we could laugh at it, and I just think that's such a gift here, Gil. What you provided was a wonderful way to laugh at our humanity and share it, and not feel it so damned heavy. And maybe we can even do something, you know, about it or with it. So that was great. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm newer. Is that on? I can't hear. I'm newer to meditation and the Insight Meditation Center, and I found that in my group there are many teachers, not just the person sitting on the mat, but everybody here, which is very amazing. So, thank you.
I was struck by how much I related to everybody's story in my group. I said, oh yeah, I've experienced that. I experienced that. And of course that fed into my whole confusion doubt. Very well.
Well, on the more tactical front, I was sloth and torpor. And I mentioned how I started the sitting because I'm really, really tired and I was just falling asleep. And is this on? Okay. And so we were sort of discussing it, but then there's another type of sloth and torpor where I'm falling asleep, but it's not because I'm lacking in sleep or I'm tired, but because something I am that's not in my consciousness, that I'm unconsciously putting a lot of effort into keeping my conscience. And so we were kind of curious, is the first one, sleepy, really considered, does it really fit in that category?
Is sleepy fit in that category? I've heard different people, you know, say different things because it's kind of sloppy, you know, what people use this as a convenient category to put a lot of things. My understanding is that more or less in a technical kind of sense, sloth and torpor don't mean sleepiness. Though even the Buddha seemed to kind of put that into the category as well. But I think of sloth as being physical and torpor as being mental. I think of sloth and torpor at least as it's an activity, it's a state that we kind of put ourselves into that has nothing to do with our energy level. Because you can, you know, you could be slothful and tired and, you know, just barely kind of getting through your meditation. And then you hear they're serving lunch for ice cream, serving ice cream for lunch, you know, you know, and then I came to the right meditation center and, you know, lots of energy.
One thing that I found interesting was when the people were describing it, I kind of quavered between two of them, but when I heard the description, it was much clearer which one I was the major one, just by hearing, because I didn't relate quite to that much intensity about the other one.
Okay.
As I did to the person who was saying mine.
Deborah?
I have a question. Since the first four, each two are like a balancing act, and is our goal to really be rid of these things, or somewhere along the way to this goal, can we find a balance? Will that help?
The middle way.
The middle.
just the right balance of desire and aversion.
if we're balanced, I mean, if neither one of them is predominant, then maybe that's the way away from those things.
Uh-huh. I think the idea in meditation is to really have these stop interfering. As long as they're interfering, they're interfering. And so we want to settle them enough so they no longer interfere with our mindfulness, our clarity, our ability to stay present, our ability to stay independent and have choice in what we do. We don't want to be kind of pulled around by the nose by these things. So to really deep concentration, they get put to rest completely. So they're not operating at all. They're latent, so they might come back later when you're not so concentrated.
So I know these from Shaidat's book, that they're the antidote. No, the jhanic factors are the antidotes to these five guys. And you can't get into jhana unless you have all the factors, which means you're rid of all the hindrances, at least temporarily. But jhana itself is only a means to an end, to insight. So are these also necessary to get rid of these, to get real insight and wisdom?
Yes.
Not just jhana states?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. That's why, so in the more mindfulness tradition where jhana is not as important, this is really kind of a key part of the practice, is to come to terms with these. If you go on a Vipassana retreat, probably the most common Dharma talk on retreats is the hindrance talk. It's given probably every time. Usually it's a 10-day retreat, it's on the third day. Because they're not relevant before that. But then they're really relevant on the third day. So, great. So that's a beginning introduction to all this. And so let's take a lunch. Let's start again at 1 o'clock. And as people who know, we'll bring out tables and either...